Today on The Grave Talks, part two of our conversation about the ghosts of Savannah, Georgia, with Bridget Pitts and Dylan Jones. Now, there are reports of people who have seen Alice Riley. Do you find those reports credible, or is it more of like a legend?
I always grew up with that legend that she still haunts the square. And for a long time, I thought it was a legend, right? Until I started doing the tours. And about, I want to say, maybe about 6 to 8 months ago, it's about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm on the phone with my mother walking through Wright Square heading back to my house, which is right there. And as I'm leaving the square, all of a sudden, I'm on the phone with my mom, and we both hear this woman wailing, like screaming. So I stop and I turn around thinking a woman's getting attacked, and I grab the mace off my backpack, and my mother's like, "Who's that?" And I said, "I don't know, but it was like, you heard that woman screaming too." And so I go through each area of the square thinking a woman's getting attacked. And I told my mother, I said, "Mom, there's nobody in the square, like no one." And she goes, "Oh my God, just go home." She was like, "If you're in Wright Square," she was like, "I don't know." She was like, "If there's nobody there." And I said, "No, there's no signs, but there's nobody out. That's the thing. It's just me and you on the phone." And so I leave. And then a couple months ago, me and my friend Gigi were sitting in the square talking about life. And it was getting a little late. And all of a sudden, I see this barefooted woman coming up the path towards us, like walking towards us. And I thought she was homeless or something, because she was wearing rags. And as she was wandering up, she disappears. And I'm frozen trying to process what I just saw. And then my friend Gigi's like, "You saw her too, didn't you?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, I did." And the energy shifted. She's like, "We should probably go, but walk me to my car before you walk home." And when we were getting up, hiding behind the bush that we were sitting next to was a man staring at us, looking at us menacingly. So I actually took it kind of like as a warning. So I do believe that she's over there. And I've had other people who have actually reported from my tour seeing her. It's so such an interesting like experience, because the cops get called out there. Sometimes they use that as like a hazing ritual for the rookies, the new cops, to go out there and take that call all the time.
Because there's no one there.
Yeah.
So the person in the bush, that was an actual person.
Yeah, it was an actual person standing behind it. Like,
so I wonder if she kind of came around to get you to move and get out of there.
I took it as like a warning, you know, like she was like looking out for us, because that still bothers me to this day, where I was like, I could literally see this woman, and the way she disappeared, it wasn't like how people like imagine a spirit to like disappear. It's almost like this person was walking up towards me, and then it was like she just got edited out. Like she was there and then gone as she was walking. Like directly up the path, like she was like coming up. And so I've always like had a sweet spot for her. So I kind of took it as like she was trying to protect us. I never feel like she's a scary human being, you know, it, like how other people like try to portray her.
That's, you know, so interesting to me. That's a great story.
Well, thank you.
And Dylan, with your background, when you hear stories like that, what do you think? Does the believer side in you come out and feel grateful that this woman saved Bridget?
I mean, you know, it's an interesting account. And I mean, I have to sort of separate the fact that, you know, Bridget and I are a couple. And if I'm going to approach an investigation, I approach it where I want to get the details of what the witness has experienced. But I'm looking at all the different factors that could make up that experience, whether, you know, looking at what the witness has seen, heard, their previous knowledge, their previous experiences, what the environmental situations were like at the time. So I'm there very much to be, just take that step back and try and understand what's gone on. And I think that's very much where the ghost hunting groups and the TV shows have let the field down, is because they're so gung-ho on using equipment, and they forget that there's a person who's had to have an experience first. So I like to catalogue the experience, get it all down in writing, then to be able to try and understand what's gone on. But the only problem is every witness experience is subjective. True. You weren't there at the time. You can't possibly know what really happened.
And you do have to take someone's word on it, that was their experience.
You are very much relying on the fact that, has the witness actually told you the truth? And I think of my policing days when I would interview people who were witnesses to a crime, and they were honest, they had integrity, they were certain about what they saw. But then when we had further evidence, like from CCTV cameras, you just begin to realize that human beings are fallible. They do make mistakes in observations and perception. So you also have to bear that in mind as well. Plus the fact, and it's happened a couple of times on the tours, where Bridget and I have been approached after the tour by a guest, and I think Bridget will remember the occasion of one man wanting to show us this photograph that he had taken, where he claims he had an image of a ghost in it. So, you know, for about 5-10 minutes, we discussed the picture with him, and he was adamant that, you know, it was what it was. And Bridget said to me afterwards, after he left, "My goodness, that was a good picture." And I said, "Yes, but it was from a ghost app. I'd seen it before." So either he was a very good actor, or, you know, he genuinely did believe that what he had was paranormal when I knew it wasn't.
I remember when that happened, and they all went in to go get a cocktail from one of our pit stops, and Dylan decided to pull up because he clocked it, and he was like, "Oh, okay, you know, interesting." And so when they went in, I said, "What did you think about that picture?" I was like, you know, I was like, "I could actually, you know, see something." And he decides to go through, and he found a specific ghost app, and he went into the Google images, and he found the exact same one. He says either, you know, he truly believes that, but he could have been using this ghost app, not understanding that, oh, you know, it's a fake app that's distorting actual pictures. And he probably either A, thought he genuinely caught it, or B, he was being a goofball.
And wanting to amaze his friends with, and probably in the bar going, "Look at what I captured."
But it was interesting because his girlfriend or fiance or whatever, she did not seem interested in that photograph.
I do think, and this would be a question for you, Dylan, I think it's very interesting when people capture EVPs, and sometimes, and I've heard some that just give me chills. Then I've heard others where they'll say, you know, you're listening to it online and they'll say, it says beware. Now I'm listening for the word beware.
Yes.
Instead of hearing what I need to hear. And then there's times where I'll hear it and I don't know what they're hearing, or there's a picture and they go, "Look at the man in the window." And I'm like, I don't know what they're seeing. And then other people kind of chime in and go, "Oh my God, I see it too," or "I hear it." You know, you put the thought in there and then people want to believe what they think they're hearing or seeing.
That's something that, I mean, Bridget has alluded to, where we do work with the Sorrel Weed House. We do this event called Ghost Busted, which is a 3-hour event. It's an investigation where you get to work with Bridget as an intuitive, one of the investigators from the house, and myself. And one of the things that we look at are images that have been obtained in the house. Could there be natural explanations? Could pareidolia be playing a part, where, you know, the human brain does like to make patterns and sense out of random images. One of the other things I also touch on is the work by my colleague, Dr. Anne Winsper. She got her doctorate in psychology just over a year ago, and she was looking at electronic voice phenomena and whether or not people can hear what is just random noise and interpret it as sound. And we do this little sort of we use this device on the screen where we play songs that people know, but the misheard lyrics and what people think they are. And that is very much like when the TV shows put something on screen, or one of the investigation teams creates a YouTube video, they put their interpretation on the EVP. And it's like what you say, once you hear that or see it on the screen, that's all you hear. But if you were to do it coldly and you just ask people to write down what they think is going on and ask 20 people, you would probably get 20 different answers.
Well, it's like that thing that was going around with Green Lantern or Brain Needle, where if you read something on the screen, your brain automatically processes it and you can hear like four different types of things if you read the certain thing when it plays again.
Right.
So your brain is something pretty interesting of what it, you know, you can trick yourself.
And I've heard EVPs that seemed extremely clear to me. That's what that said.
Yeah. But, and I've heard some clear ones too. So, you know, I never debunk those because I do agree that you can actually hear certain things that are crystal clear without saying anything. And I feel like the way it should go about is like, okay, everybody write down, do not say what you hear. And then if everybody hears it, I feel like that would be a better way to kind of interpret it. But, you know, I've heard some pretty clear ones myself.
I've heard some very good EVP as well. Never recorded it. And I think it's an area that is certainly open to a lot more rigorous study. I think there's some things that can be done and should be done. And hopefully that will start to happen. From my concern, I think Bridget has already alluded to, I wish a lot of the ghost hunters would just leave a lot of the equipment alone. And I'll just give you one brief example, and that's the full spectrum camera. There are so many places selling those. There is no such thing as a full spectrum camera. And what was interesting, we work with actual photographers, and I work, my degree is in media production, and I know a lot of camera operators and photographers, and they all confirm there is no such thing. Yet there are so many shops selling them. You know, stay away from that kind of thing. Just focus on equipment that actually does do what it is intended to do.
And Bridget, with your abilities, I was talking to someone recently, and I mentioned this actually again in another episode because I found it made so much sense to me. But someone had, this man owns this estate that he bought, notoriously haunted, and it had been broken into for years, and people just going in and exploring as they do because it was abandoned. And somebody had spray painted on the wall, "These walls can talk if you sit and listen," or something to that effect. And I find that is so profound to me that I think a lot of times as investigators, and I'd like you both to chime in on this, do you feel that people kind of hide behind the equipment and they're so invested in what's in front of them and the equipment, sometimes they're missing some... Now, I get the recordings and EVPs and all that, but I think that maybe you're missing some things.
Yeah, I agree. So it's so interesting. And the fact that, like, you're asking this question when I've always used equipment, right? But when I started doing the ghost busted thing where we have these three different levels, I do not use any equipment for mine. Neither does Dylan, but I use old school methods. So anything that would be considered old school would be dowsing rods, pendulums, compasses, because those are the original K2 meters, you know, going back to the 1800s. But what we kind of do instead, because I've noticed people don't even pick up that equipment. It's there if they want to use it. Great. But we wander around. And I like that you quoted, if these walls could talk, these walls could talk if you just sit and listen. And that's what we do. We sit and listen and kind of open the session with, you know, love and light to say, you know, we welcome you. We want to hear your stories if you wish to communicate. And, you know, I'll do three knocks and say you can communicate however you wish. And it's interesting when they do actually communicate and you can hear what they want to say. Like Francis from the Sorrel Weed House, I said, you know, do you want to tell us your story? And he goes, no. And I said, who's that? And it said, me. And I said, who's me? And it was coming from Francis's study. And I said, Francis, is that you? And it said, yes. So, okay, if you don't want to tell us your story right now, that's totally understandable. But then we've also had people where we would sit down in the women's parlor, and coming from the men's parlor, when we asked, is somebody there? And we all heard, yes. And I said, what's your name? And it said, William. And I wasn't the only one that heard it. Everybody from the group did too. And I said, did you guys hear William? And they were like, yeah, we did. And I said, could we come in there, please? And it says, you may. And when we walked in there, they would flicker the lights for us. Like, what was it? Dylan, did we do it? Not last night, but the night before last. We were doing Ghostbusters, and we were sitting in the women's parlor. And in the women's parlor, the lights were always on dim. We don't do total darkness for mine. We do dimly lit room. The lights are on. And what happened was the lights completely turned down, like they dimmed all the way dark on their own. And then they turned all the way back on their own. And it was the most fascinating thing because people were just sitting there and we're like completely like it took your breath away. And, you know, we ended up hearing a lot of disembodied voices or clear responses. That's what I find to be so fascinating, because when you do use that equipment, it drowns it out.
Mm-hmm.
I just think what I would say is that when we do the events, I'm in a very different part of the house. So I'm not present when Bridget is in that part looking at the spiritualist methods. When it comes to the point that you were asking about that going into the buildings and the approach they take, I just think it's really it's a pseudoscientific practice that ghost hunters are going into a building because it looks haunted. That's like saying to me when I was a police officer walking past a bank, oh, let's go in there and investigate to see whether or not they've had a robbery. You wouldn't put time and effort into doing that because you have to wait until there is something that happens. And I think that ghost hunters are so enamored by the use of equipment because it lights up and it gives this appearance of being scientific. I went to one event a couple of months ago and they were using a Wimshurst machine, which is an electrostatic generator, and claimed that if you use that, it will make the ghosts appear. Well, it didn't work that night for certain. So they're using equipment to try and give that sense of being credible instead of just taking what the witness has experienced and trying to understand that and use rational means. I just think that they're not doing the field any favors.
I think that's interesting. And I think this whole concept of the ghost busted, it would be fascinating. I would love to do something like that.
That we'll have to get you down to Savannah.
I was born in Georgia. That was about the longest I was there was 1 year of my life, the first year. So I know nothing about Georgia. But I need to go back. And Savannah is one of those places I've always wanted to go to.
Yeah, we can definitely make it happen. Savannah is such a wild place because we've always joked as being locals that it's almost like this black hole that keeps sucking you back in. Like, you can try to check out anytime you like, but you can never leave either. And I've met numerous people who would be on my tours and they'd come to visit constantly. And the next thing you know, we run into several that said, hey, we just moved here. You know, it's an interesting place. And people talk about how Savannah's full of portals. You know, could it be because we're surrounded by water or numerous things that could, you know, draw people in? Oh gosh, me and Dylan were reading one time, there's no proof, but they used to always say that James Edward Oglethorpe was part of the occult because Savannah's built like what kind of temple is it, Dylan?
It was Solomon's temple that it was referred to.
And I'm like, oh, okay, always those weird aspects. But Savannah is absolutely beautiful, and it has a lot of supernatural things as well. That's kind of like Bonaventure. You know, it brings a tear to people's eyes how stunning that is. And, you know, that put us on the map for Midnight in the Garden, Good and Evil, based on the murder trial of Jim Williams. You know, that has a lot of voodoo and a lot of supernatural crazy things involved in that. And it's based on a true story of Jim Williams murdering Danny Hansford in 1981. And then he got acquitted, and his trial went to court four times. And then all charges were dropped in 1989. And then he dropped dead 8 months later around the same area where, you know, Danny was shot and killed by him.
Oh, wow.
They always talk about a woman named Minerva in the book, and her real name's Valerie Bowles. And she was married to Dr. Buzzard, who wrote a really cool book called The White Witch. But they're huge into voodoo. Huge. And like, these people are still around, you know, not Miss Valerie Bowles and her husband, but their family is. And there's a lot of people that from the movie, even they played themselves in the film.
And I've seen so, that, and it's been so long ago. I need to rewatch that.
Well, I think you definitely should, because sacrifices still happen in the cemeteries, you know, witchcraft, voodoo. Yeah. What, we had one in Colonial Park a couple weeks ago during that equinox. There was a chicken who was headless, and there was a note lodged inside of the bird. And it actually sat in the cemetery for a couple days. We'd walk by it on the ghost tour, and it was absolutely disgusting. Yeah, because it was just pretty bad, the smell. But they eventually took it out, and yeah, people still get away with certain things all around. It runs real deep.
You know, sometimes when I do interviews with people, like, and Dylan and I have been communicating, and I'm like, what are some of the great places we should discuss? So I have all these notes of things. But what I really love is when I do an interview and it takes a whole different life of its own. And today I just found this so interesting just to talk to the two of you. And I know it's not as much about Savannah as I planned on doing, but it was just really interesting to me. And I think the tours would be fascinating to do with you guys.
I absolutely love the history of Savannah, the haunted aspects, the ghostly stories, but it's also about respecting the dead too. If you wouldn't talk to have somebody talk about your great grandmother in a negative way, why would you talk about a stranger the same? You know, so I always like to look at it from that perspective when I do the tours. And of course, we throw in a couple legends and spooky stories, but history is just as scary than a lie, you know?
Especially sometimes in Savannah. That's a rich history. And tragic.
And some people think the truth is not the real truth until they look it up. And like, I like to drop dates. I'm a huge date person. I like to make sure people know, like, you know, things that I talk about, you can pull it up on your phone. You know, I'll send you a link.
And I'm a history person. And so if I hear a story, you know, and I get that there's a difference between legend and lore, and every mm-hmm. city has that. There's the stories of, you know, the woman on the bridge or whatever it is. And I think those are interesting, and they're all usually based somewhere, in fact. But I want the stories that I hear to be historically correct. And I want to know that the things happened when you said they happened. So I really appreciate, I personally really appreciate hearing the dates and the specific information.
Well, good. And that's what I take pride on. I like to bring something a little different, you know, local knowledge, you know, because I've lived here. So I don't want to say a crazy story. I actually had a locals night of all the historians that came on my tour before. And it was a good time, you know, a lot of confidence. And, you know, when they try to test your knowledge on something, and then I'd show them, then they're like, oh, okay. So she's standing firm in what she's saying. And I'm like, yep. And of course, I constantly change my stories too. If I'm wrong on something, I will always correct mm-hmm. it. I want to make sure that things are accurate, and things change in history too. You keep learning more and more, and I keep adding to it.
And I do want to ask you real quick about, because you do the ghost tour, a Tybee Island ghost tour. There's a haunted mansion walking tour. There's a Conjuring Cocktails haunted pub crawl. I would love that.
The Conjuring Cocktail pub crawl is awesome. I have fantastic guides for this, and they are hilarious, but they love the actual knowledge, and they tell stories that I can't tell on the regular tours because it's all for adults, you know?
I just think that would be so fun. So you've got different things, and you can get all the information at the website. It's witchinghoursavannah.com. And sign up for a tour. I think it would be fascinating. I can't wait to come visit.
Hey, I can't wait till you get here.
That would be so fun. And Dylan, thank you so much for taking part. And I think you and I could just do an episode on your studies. I think that would be fascinating.
I'd be more than happy to do that. And thanks for inviting us.
That would be great. Thank you, Bridget. Thank you so much for doing this today. I really appreciate it.
Hey, it was an honor. Thank you so much.
And that wraps up our conversation with Bridget Pitts and Dylan Jones of the Witching Hour Paranormal Ghost Tour. For more information on their ghost tours of Savannah, visit their website, witchinghoursavannah.com. You can also find them on Facebook. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, you'll get the archive and advance episodes without the commercials. Become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.